Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. My name is quadrilaterally Marcus Freestone. This episode is called The Meaning in Life, not The Meaning of Life. Oh no, The Meaning in Life. In the book and in previous episodes, we've dealt with the meaning of life. So I thought we should sort of follow that on and say, okay, so how do we find meaning in life? So that is what I'm doing in this episode, because I told myself to. And here goes. What would a meaning of life even look like anyway? How could it be expressed in language? And surely there would always be someone for whom it was meaningless. All this is sort of discussed in length. It's discussed in the free ebook, but it's discussed at even more length in the brand spanking new ebook, and in a couple of weeks, hopefully from the release of this, barring lots of annoying technical things, paperback, oh yes, a real book, you know, with pages and everything. It's covered in that at some depth, and I'll start with a cheeky promotion. The ebook, it's called the second edition. It's greatly expanded and revised, not only from the free ebook, but also what was previously published as the ebook. The ebook is $1.99 in your US type currency, as I believe that's where most of my listeners are. That's about £1.25 or something UK. Convert that to your own currency. It's pretty cheap. The paperback will, I'm not quite sure what price that will be yet, because I'm currently on my third print on demand publisher due to really annoying technical reasons. I'm trying to find a print on demand publisher so I can get paperbacks out there at a reasonable price and still make some money. I thought I'd found one, and then I discovered that they charged £7, which is about $12, as the most basic postage for one paperback, and it takes about 3 weeks to arrive, and you have to be in to sign for it. So that's no good. So I'm currently trying Amazon CreateSpace. Anyway, that's irrelevant. Let's crack on with talking about meaning and not me banging on about how annoying it is trying to publish books. A lot of people attach meaning and importance to things that don't matter out of a grandiose sense of self-importance. Being rude to the person on a supermarket till because you've had to queue for 2 minutes is a prime example. Those sort of people, and there are sadly many of them, clearly consider themselves to be a priority. Their time is more precious than that of those around them. That kind of attitude, as well as being philosophically absurd and unjustifiable, is bad for the person and everyone around them. We know that the hypertension and stress that this sort of attitude causes is corrosively bad for your health. And it also, of course, causes stress to the people that you take out your impatience on. Everyone and their time is equally important and equally unimportant from a teleological point of view. And we'll come on to teleology later. he said patronizingly, assuming you don't know what that means. But it's fairly obscure. You might not know what it means. If you don't panic. It's coming up later. I've been amazed my whole life at the incendiary levels of anger some people work themselves into over things that empirically just don't matter. In the words of Mel Brooks's 2,000-year-old man character, never run for a bus, there'll always be another one. Now that almost everyone has mobile phones umbilically attached to them, it matters even less if you are going to be late for something. Next time you're feeling angry or impatient, stop and ask yourself, what difference is this actually going to make to my life? If you are late for a meeting, is the world going to spin off its axis? No. In almost all circumstances, even if you are Prime Minister or President of a country, if you're late for something, it doesn't matter. Nothing in the world will change one iota because of your actions you deem so important. And on a side note, now that as I recall this, we're coming to the end of Obama's administration. I don't watch television myself, but I saw that on UK TV there was a programme, I think last week, along the lines of what has Obama actually achieved, and clearly the tone of it was bugger all, despite his best intentions. And that's kind of depressing, but in a way it shows that, well, if even the President of America can't really have that much of an effect on the world, then surely the rest of us, what we do doesn't really matter to anyone else. So getting angry about being delayed or waiting in a queue or being late for something or somebody mildly annoying you, in global terms, in universal terms, it is, I would say, probably in a negative mathematical measurement of importance. So I suppose the message of this is just get over yourselves. However, seamless segue. However, meaning is entirely subjective. So how can we ever form any kind of agreement on what is or isn't meaningful? Moreover, is it fair to dictate or prescribe meaning to other people? In my opinion, no, it isn't, which is one of my beefs with organized religion. And as I say that, I'm hoping that the word beef is it's not just a British thing. My problem is called having a beef with. Anyway, moving on. On the other hand, going back to the opening statement, how is it even possible to force a meaning or value system onto people? A group, country, or state can opine that this is what we all find meaningful, but you can't make somebody feel that something is meaningful. You can be autocratic and control people's behaviour, or forcefully prevent certain expressions of feeling or thought. Even indoctrinate them into believing certain things to be true or false. But telling somebody you must find X or Y meaningful will not make them feel that it has meaning, because meaning is something personal and subjective. My girlfriend is a Christian, and she often says to me, it's easy, you just have to believe. But that just doesn't work for me, and it never has, and it never will. I don't feel, and never have done, that any sort of religious belief has any meaning. The concept of having faith or belief in an idea is something I simply cannot get my head around. People who believe in a god look at nature or the universe and have a teleological view. They see meaning because they believe everything was created for a purpose. I look up at the stars and I find the universe beautiful, but I don't feel any meaning of any kind. The universe was there for 9 billion years before the Earth formed, and it will be there for billions of years after the Earth has boiled away into non-existence. For those interested, that's in about 5 billion years' time. But before that, in about 3 billion years, the Earth will be uninhabitable because the sun will run out of energy and it will all freeze. But that's beside the point. Hey, it's 3 billion years. It's nothing we have to worry about. Just getting some kind of perspective on things. To claim that the purpose of the entire universe is to allow life on this one tiny planet is just nonsensical when you look at the maths of it. Maths, not math. Sorry, Americans, the abbreviation of mathematics is maths, not math. Anyway, I've got into trouble online before complaining to American people about grammar, so I'm going to shut up now. The only religion I could ever participate in is Buddhism. I've done Buddhist meditation a few times and it's a wonderfully relaxing, energizing and enjoyable activity. But for me, it's a purely psychological experience, not a mystical one, and therefore I don't ascribe meaning to it. And perversely, and whether this is surprising or not, I don't know, but when I used to mix in those kind of circles, I think I mentioned it in the book that in my early 20s, for a few years, I was an active member of the Theosophical Society. I think I explained what that is in the book. It's basically sort of esoteric Buddhism and Hinduism and meditation and stuff. And during that time, I can honestly say that some of the most argumentative and cantankerous people I've ever met have at least identified themselves as Buddhists. How do we find meaning with a small m in our everyday lives? For me, writing is, and always has been, a big part of my life. I've published, I've lost count now, 10 or 12 books, and I do 2 podcasts, and I've released about 50 albums of music. That has meaning for me, regardless of any audience they may or may not have. I find that the process itself of writing or making music gives my life meaning. I am creating unique things that would not exist if I hadn't brought them to life. I have a substantial, tangible body of work I can point to and say, I did that. That's what I do. I feel that my purpose in life is to write and be creative and to put things out into the world, such as this podcast that you are listening to now with your ears and face. Nobody ever told me that I should do that, and I certainly received no encouragement in that direction as a child, or indeed since. The life I have ended up pursuing is one that I have chosen and created entirely myself through my own volition and interests. If I had somehow been forced or coerced into it, then it wouldn't have any meaning for me. So meaning is not something that can be prescribed from a higher authority. It's something you have to discover for yourself, following the existential model, which we've talked about in recent episodes. If you feel it to be meaningful, then it has meaning for you, and anyone else's opinions as to the meaningfulness or meaninglessness of the thing you find meaningful are irrelevant because it's subjective. My creative work has meaning for me that is unconnected to any purpose the work may or may not have. For me, the process of creation is a part of my life that I find meaningful, regardless of the existence of those pieces of work out in the wider world. The effect that any of my books or this podcast may have on any members of the audience is a separate matter from the personal meaning I gain from the creative process. Therefore, you do not have to share creative work with anyone else in order for it to have meaning for you. Meaning and purpose are two separate things. Purpose involves the attainment of some kind of goal. Meaning is the attribution of significance to something. For example, eating food to stay alive has purpose, but no meaning. I talked recently about Sartre's concept of being for others and the eternal problem of the idea of other people being so prominent in our consciousness that we often feel criticized even when we are alone. Can this also be a problem with finding individual subjective meaning in our lives? We know that perception is subjective, and therefore not everyone is going to agree on what is and isn't meaningful. So, if you feel that something is meaningful, but everyone around you disagrees, will you be able to hold on to and maintain that sense of meaning? Does being for others have any influence over our sense of meaning? Disregarding what I said earlier, is it ever possible to force or indoctrinate someone into feeling a sense of meaning? The history of religion would suggest that it is, at least with some people in some circumstances. But in the broader social sense, are we influenced by the precedent of established collective notions of meaning? Why do I find writing so meaningful? In parentheses, in the book, there is a section where I included a piece I wrote on a creative writing course a few years ago called Why I Write. And if you want to refer to that, which I suggest you do, because I've just mentioned it and therefore I think it's relevant, that sort of explains why I find writing meaningful and why I've devoted my life to it. So read the book and check that out. Not necessarily now, but as an adjunct to this episode. But further to that, thinking about it now, books and music were the first things I ever engaged with from a young age. And the reasons for this I've only just thought about. My grandfather, my mother's father, was my favourite person in my family and a huge influence on me. And he played the organ, and he had an organ in his flat that he built himself out of components, because he was a total electronics and technical genius, which sadly I haven't inherited. But what first got me into playing music was playing the organ that he built when I was... there's a photo of me playing it when I was three. So I was playing music from a very young age, because somewhere that I went often, there was a musical instrument there. And sadly, I have no recollection or any recordings of my grandfather playing the organ or the piano, but that was what got me into playing music. The idea of playing music was, it was just there, and it was something that I latched onto. And in terms of books, my father, who I didn't grow up with, my parents split when I was a baby, he gave me, for some reason, a load of books of his that were all adult books. They were all about history and archaeology and wildlife. And when I was about four, I somehow taught myself to read, and I read all these books before I went to school. So the idea of books and music being somehow important is something that was sort of, I was going to say bred into me, but that's wrong genetically. And in fact, I'm going to mention genetics at the end of this. The idea of books and music and creating them was something that I had from the age of about three or four. So, and this might be a bit kind of Freudian and pernickety, but what the hell, this is just something I've thought lately, and it may be relevant to you in some way and what you're interested in. Perhaps it's the fact that I was introduced to books and music at such a young age by the only two male authority figures in my life that has made me attribute such meaning and emotion to them to this day. Because I'm nearly 44 now, and I still think that books and music are the two most important things in the world. As a reader and a listener of music, they are the things that excite me the most, that interest me the most. They are the things that give meaning to my life as a separate issue from writing books and making music. Also gives meaning to my life. In a way, returning to our previous look at existentialism, it's entirely positive that there's no such thing as objective meaning, because that means that we are all free to find our own meaning. Now, don't panic, but I'm just going to very briefly talk about genetics to close this episode. I recently watched one of the... I'm kind of ambivalent about the interwebs and all that digital stuff, but one of the great things is that you can go on YouTube or whatever and find thousands, millions of high-grade university lectures by great people, scientists, philosophers, psychologists, whatever. And all this stuff is now freely available. And something I watched recently, as I record this, it is the 18th of March, 2016, and I watched something that was recorded last year in Oslo. It was a university lecture by the British geneticist and science presenter and popularizer Adam Rutherford. And he was having a go, as I have been for years, about all these ridiculous, absurd, and entirely non-scientific, non-logical media stories about scientists. Scientists have discovered a gene for, etc., etc. And now that we're about 15 years on from sequencing the human genome and we have a much greater understanding of genetics, there has been a lot of progress made that I think is relevant to what we're talking about here. It turns out that the prevailing view for the last sort of 40, 50 years or so, that the nature-nurture debate, i.e. are we born with certain character traits or do we develop them later in life and through infancy? I mean, 20 years ago, it used to be thought that, oh, it was about 50-50 between genetics and upbringing. It now turns out that there isn't a gene for anything. There isn't a gene for evil. There isn't a gene for violent behavior. There isn't a gene for depression. There isn't a gene for obesity or any form of human behavior whatsoever. There isn't even a gene, strictly speaking, for eye or hair color. Eye and hair color and height, they are not 100% genetically determined, because we know now through studying the genome, you can take two parents, both of whom have the same color hair, and the child can be born with a different color hair. And it turns out through studying genetics, that's entirely logical and explicable. So the final point that I just want to make relevant to this episode is that nothing, absolutely nothing about you of any relevance whatsoever to the life you live is genetically determined. There is no such thing as being genetically lazy, genetically violent. Even the heritability of intelligence is sort of questionable, because it's almost impossible to measure intelligence. IQ tests are, you know, acknowledged to be nonsense now. So the point I just want to make relevant to this podcast, this episode, and to the book and the podcast and this whole thing in general, is that we are not genetically determined. Everything, absolutely everything in our lives, all our interests, our phobias, our social attitudes, our behavior, our thoughts, our interests, our prejudices, absolutely everything, every single thing that defines us as human beings is not genetically determined. It is not programmed into us at birth. Almost nothing is programmed into us at birth. It is all things that we learn throughout our lives. And therefore, returning to an existentialist view, if it's not predetermined, it's not dictated. If we have learned a type of behavior, a way of thinking, an attitude towards ourselves or the world, or what is or isn't meaningful, then we can unlearn it at any time we choose. And that is entirely positive. So that's the episode. That's the end of episode 14 of Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. I have remained through the last half hour, Marcus Freestone, and I am, as I said, I'm hoping that the paperback will be available in the next couple of weeks, barring annoying technical things that I won't bore you with. But the ebook is available now. I say it's $1.99 American money, about $1.30 or something UK. It's quite cheap, and it's, I can't remember how many words it is. It's quite a substantial book, and you know, if you've got a couple of dollars to spare, please go and buy it. Please like the Google Plus page, the Facebook page, go to my website, check out all my other stuff. You can donate directly to the podcast if you want to encourage me to make more. My aim is to have 50 episodes up by the end of this year, 2016. I hope to get there, but, you know, I need to earn a living as well. So, you know, if you could just, you know, like if 100 people donated $5 via the PayPal link on the website, then that would make a massive difference to my life, because I'm quite poor. Just crack on with your lives, and I hope to get lots more episodes up soon. Check out the ebook. The paperback will be out soon. I hope it won't be too expensive and I can make some money out of it. And MarcusFreestone.com, Google Positive Thinking, the Meaning of Life. There's the Google Plus page, a Facebook page, and it's on iTunes and loads of other places. And I think that's all the words I have. Bye-bye.